Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Creams and serums are made of 70% water, 15% preservatives and emulsifiers, leaving only around 15% for the active ingredients that your skin needs. But luckily now, there's Fiber Skincare.
15 years ago, the scientists behind Fiber Skincare started working on nanofibers, which are 500 times smaller than human hair. You know, I saw that in Three Body Problem. Mm. 1 year ago, they patented a way of wrapping the nanofiber around oil or liquid-based ingredients. This means they can deliver 5 times the active ingredients compared to creams or serums, as there is no need for water, preservatives, or emulsifiers.
The first formulation made with this technology is plant-based, anti-wrinkle. It's a set of patches that you use over a series of 7 days. You just put these on whenever you would apply your serums, and your skin is going to feel tighter in 10 seconds. And over the seven-day program, it has been clinically proven to reduce wrinkles by, get this, 19.4%, a very precise percentage. In fact, they have a tighter skin guarantee. If your skin isn't tighter in 7 days, they're going to give you your money back, no questions asked.
You get the tighter skin guarantee with this 7-day routine. Tighter skin or your money back. Get a 15% discount code by using the discount code GAME. That's Fiber Skincare.
It's the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses. This is the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses.
How would you feel if we took Bachelor Happy Hour on tour?
Oh, hell yeah.
That would be so fun.
I think we're going to, hopefully, eventually. We talked about it in the past pre-COVID,
no
and it was
way.
Actually planned.
What?
Yes. Yeah, we were supposed
Dang,
to.
Dang, I signed to. On right on time. Okay.
Yeah, so I'm hoping. I mean, like, let's manifest it now,
really?
Michelle, but hopefully by, like, the fall, we can be on the road.
Welcome to Game of Roses. This is what's left of Pace Case after this week.
This is Bachelor Clues. I am still here, 100% intact.
Good for you.
Thank you very much.
Must be nice.
It's okay. It's okay. This is This Week in Bachelor Nation. As you know, it is a Friday, so we're going to give you all them tids. We're going to give you some of them parasocial plays. We're going to give you those screams from that pit. We're even going to talk about what we're watching in our new segment, What Are You Watching? And we're going to give you a state of the world today, because some very important stuff is happening in the world, and the state of the world is, of course, ever changing. But before we get to any of that, we just want to say that we hope everyone is enjoying Gore Girl Summer so far. When we started it, we had no idea it was going to include so much, but it's really turning out to have it all. We got interviews with Tammy Lee. We got interviews with Elise Delbaum, Sarah Herron, Courtney Robertson. We got the best coverage of Bachelor Live on stage that, to our knowledge, has ever been done. We even got Pace Case contracting COVID-19 on the festival circuit at Coachella. What more could Gore Girl Summer have to offer? Well, we have some more incredible interviews coming up in the very near future. Next week, to be exact, is going to be one you do not want to miss. And the week after that is going to be another one you do not want to miss. So once again, we just want to thank everyone for joining us as we go through Gore Girl Summer. And rest assured, it ain't even close to being over.
No, it's not. And please show the love for all of the Gore Girls if you have enjoyed their appearances on the podcast. And
yeah, you know, I'm happy to have sacrificed my body and mind for getting COVID at Coachella for my field report. I'm luckily now recording my first podcast since I have tested negative for COVID. So that is great.
Congratulations. That's fantastic.
Yes. I can now go out in the world. And that is nice. Yeah. Right in time for a hell of a week.
Speaking of a hell of a week, we also have to mention up top here that the new Game of Roses logo is almost here. And it's launching next week. We're going to have links out across the Gore sphere, all of our various social media accounts. We will be describing it here as well, but get ready for it. We had our temp logo in place since the unceremonious dismissal of Dark Lord Harrison, and now we are very ready to unveil our brand new logo just in time for the historic season 19 of The Bachelorette, which will be premiering in about 2 months. So you're going to have plenty of time to gear up with the new Gore logo and strut your stuff into a viewing party to witness the unprecedented horrors of the Windeckia season. And now it's time to start our show by discussing some events that have happened out there in the broader world. This is beyond the scope of our beloved game, but we are going to tell you exactly how those events relate right back to our beloved game. This is
Game of Roses, State of the World.
There's a lot going on right now. We hit 1 million COVID deaths in the United States this week. Russia is still attacking Ukraine. And unfortunately, the hellscape keeps hellscaping. The latest. The Supreme Court wrote a draft opinion that would overturn Roe v. Wade. And this was leaked and published by Politico this week. And we must say, a trigger warning here, we are going to talk about abortion and sexual assault in this segment. Please skip ahead 15, 20 minutes if you do not wish to engage with this topic. Politico got this, what it calls a draft of the majority opinion written by Justice Alito, and it would strike down Roe v. Wade. The draft was circulated in early February, and the final opinion has not been released. Votes and language can still change. The opinion is not expected to be published until late June, and the court confirmed the authenticity of this on Tuesday, stressing that it was not the final decision, but it would overturn Roe versus Wade's holding of a federal constitutional right to an abortion. This would be the most important abortion decision in decades. It's the most important Supreme Court decision in my lifetime, and it would transform women's reproductive health in our country completely. And there are five justices that are looking to vote this way. Alito, Clarence Thomas, Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett. Chief Justice John Roberts did not want to completely overturn it and would have dissented with the court's three liberals. There's so many different implications of this. There are 13 states that already have trigger laws where abortion would be illegal if Roe versus Wade is struck down immediately. There's 14 other states that have other restrictions, and then there's 23 states that have broad abortion access for now. So that's 13.7 million women living in states which would ban most abortions, 19.8 million women living in states where, this is women aged 15 to 44, living in states with other restrictions that would take effect, and there's 30.8 million women age 15 to 44 who live in states that would have broad access to abortion for now. Louisiana Republicans just voted to advance a bill out of committee that would make abortion from the moment of fertilization a crime in which the mother can be charged with homicide I have had trouble sleeping the last couple nights, even though, you know, we have known that this was coming. There have been states making effective bans already, but it still hits very hard. And I haven't felt this angry in a minute. Literally just so mad that I can't sleep. And I always thought that my children would have more rights than me, not fewer. It really feels to me like we are being ruled by a minority rule that is intent on hurting the people in this country who are already hurting the most. The most marginalized communities are the ones that are going to be affected by this. And it is fucked up. And for me, it has, again, brought up this idea that to many, women are second-class citizens. And obviously, everyone who has a uterus, not just women. And it's this implication that everyone who's not an able-bodied, white, cis, heterosexual man is a lesser human. Men are not more people than women. White people are not more people than Black people. Women are not accessories. We're not womb vessels. We're not defined by our relationships with men, aka daughters, sisters, moms, etc. But the patriarchy is unfortunately alive and well. We spend a fifth of our lives from your first period until menopause bleeding and in pain. And it's this huge, shameful thing that is often not subsidized at all. I used to hide my tampons in my sleeve when I would get up to go to the bathroom in high school. And we're paying out of pocket for birth control pills, IUDs, tampons, pads, diva cups, etc., let alone all of the payment and money investment that you have to do if you're going to carry out a pregnancy. Many of us live with reproductive organ related pain that is not just, it's just not really acknowledged in our society. I believe abortion is healthcare and that this is a ruling that is the consequence of a movement that is trying to control our bodies. And, you know, we don't force people to give up their kidneys in this country. We have generally the rights to our own bodies. As soon as you go into a coma, we don't take out that person's organs to go to help people unless that is what the person wanted or the person they've designated decides. Even if a person dies, we don't take their organs without their consent. And we're basically saying that women have fewer rights than corpses in this case. And for me, I don't care what your personal view is on abortion. Like, if you don't want to have an abortion, then I don't think you should have an abortion. But you should not, in my opinion, impose your beliefs on other people, especially in a way that's not going to do, it's not an effective way of preventing abortion. I don't think that you are, quote unquote, pro-life if you don't give a shit what happens to a baby after it's born. I don't believe you're pro-life if you don't give a shit about mothers and healthcare.
Or waging war. That, to me, is another weird thing about the whole pro-life movement. It's like, okay, we will drastically limit women's choices where it comes to healthcare in terms of abortion, but definitely up all the fucking spending on the defense budget and wage as much war as we can. There's a war going on right now in Ukraine. Let's stay out of that. We'll give them some weapons and stuff, but we're not going to help those people. It's a very obviously like it's a cherry picked kind of attitude, I think, in most cases for the pro-life movement.
And I mean, study after study shows that this is not how you prevent abortion. You prevent abortion with sexual health education. You prevent it with contraception. This is pro maternal death. This is pro poverty. This is pro psychological and physical trauma. This is pro women enslavement. And, you know, women have been enslaved since the beginning of time. And it's only pretty recently that we're not as enslaved. And I believe that forced motherhood is a form of female enslavement and that forced birth is a form of class warfare, as it's disproportionately affecting already marginalized communities. Another aspect of this that I wanted to address is that we are living in a rape culture. You never know what someone is going through or has been through. And if they are a woman, like, they are statistically, they've been harassed, they've been assaulted. According to the National Sexual Violence Resource Center, 1 in 5 women in the United States experienced completed or attempted rape during their lifetime. 1 in 5. Nearly a quarter of men in the U.S. experienced some form of sexual violence. 81% of women and 43% of men reported experiencing some form of sexual harassment and or assault in their lifetime. 1 in 3 female victims of completed or attempted rape experienced it for the first time between the ages of 11 and 17. I'm not an abortion rights expert by any means. I am an expert in having lived my whole life as a woman, and caveat upon caveat, privilege upon privilege, being born into my situation, lucky enough to have been born into a position where I had access to healthcare, education, and whiteness. I've been accepted for my sexuality. I was born into the gender that I identify with, but I'm still a woman, and that does come with a lot. There are the smaller things, walking past men and they put their hand on the small of your back. Oh, it's the small of your back, but it's touching your butt. I've been grabbed. I've been slapped. I've had men put hands up my skirt. I've had horrifying things yelled at me, sometimes multiple times in one day. Countless animal noises jeered at me, kissy noises, told to smile. I've been followed. I've been called a bitch and other things countless times. I've been sent unsolicited dick pictures. I've been sent countless threatening messages on dating apps. And then there are the bigger things. During the first Women's March, I spoke with a lot of women from my mother's generation. And they talked about realizing that they had been assaulted when they were younger, and that this was kind of bringing this out, that they didn't really realize how fucked up some of the shit that they had lived through was. Because, I mean, women are incredibly strong. And it got me thinking about certain aspects of rape culture that I have accepted and, like, thought were normal. For instance, there was a frat at my extremely liberal college, UC Berkeley, that was known just through the campus as the rape frat. Like, don't go there. They'll put shit in your drink.
Jesus Christ.
And I've talked to many friends, and there's a rape frat at, like, every campus. Like, everyone knows what the most dangerous places for women are. And it's just this sort of word of mouth kind of thing. And sexual assault is a huge problem in colleges. And this didn't really occur to me during the first Women's March, but during this week, I have been thinking about rape a lot, for obvious reasons. And I was thinking, like, oh, like, I'm grateful that that has never been attempted on me. I was like, but I have been sexually assaulted. And I was thinking back on the story of my, like, most prominent sexual assault memory. And I was in a bar in Echo Park, this kind of hipster neighborhood in Los Angeles. And I was ordering a drink at the bar, and I was wearing a dress, and I felt someone grab my butt. And I didn't turn around. Like, this is how normal that is for me, like, people grabbing my butt. I didn't even turn around. I didn't turn around the second time. And then the third time I felt it, I turned around. And it wasn't someone grabbing my butt. It was a guy who had his dick out and was trying to put his dick on my ass, like, under my dress.
Jesus, fuck.
And I hit him. I, like, punched him in the chest, and I grabbed the bartender, and they eventually got the bouncer to, like, kick this guy out. And obviously, like, this is a person who's dealing with mental health issues. And like, I was like lucky in certain ways in that situation because there were people around to help me and stuff. But like, this week has made me think about it a lot and like what I would have done if it had been a slightly different circumstance and like had somehow led to a pregnancy. And if I lived in a state with one of these like trigger laws, what you do in that situation. And if you don't have money, like you need money to be able to go get an out-of-state abortion. And, you know, that's like a trauma I've gone back to a lot. And thinking about what I wish I had done, like I wish I had kicked him in the dick. Like I wish I had somehow like kicked his dick off somehow.
That would be impressive. That's
yeah.
High level technique.
I know this is like a very dark story. I've never shared it on this podcast before. I've never shared it with people that I don't know before. But I bet if you talk to the women in your life, most of them have stories like this. And many people I love and that you love have had abortions. I've taken Plan B before, which now I guess will be considered a crime. In Louisiana, no birth control is 100% effective. And I don't know. This is just like a really, this is a really hard week. And I haven't been able to sleep. And I feel such rage. And I've been thinking a lot about this. I tried to look up what this is, but it's kind of hard to Google. But there's a German word, which we don't have a word for, but it refers to this specific depression that is related to having a gap between how good you know a society could be and then the reality of what society looks like. And I've just been thinking about that so much. It's like, we could have such a good society.
We could have a utopia. Literally.
Yeah. There's all the resources for that.
Everyone have exactly what they need. Unfortunately, human greed stops that from happening. I mean, everything that you have just said is like, thanks for sharing that. Obviously, I know that that's a hard thing to fucking talk about. And
yeah.
I can't even begin to understand as a dude, like what any of that is truly like. I am aligned with the mm-hmm. pro-choice movement ideologically. And I fully understand that what is happening is bad, at least in terms of what I think the world should be and what I think would make the most people happy. But I will never have the first person understanding of what it's like. And
they don't either. And that's part of the problem. People who don't have reproductive organs making laws about what we can do with our reproductive organs. And this is like, it's incredibly depressing and dark, this situation, but the alternative is that we give up and everything gets much worse. I think that democracy is something that you have to fight to maintain. I think that human rights are something you have to fight to maintain, unfortunately.
Clearly. I mean, what you said in the beginning of this was, I think, absolutely 100% correct. We are now living in a system that is governed by the minority. The majority of people in this mm-hmm. country voted for Hillary Clinton, which means if she would have gotten in, the Supreme Court justices that Donald Trump appointed would not have been appointed. It would have been other Supreme Court justices.
Three.
Who would have represented the majority opinion. And so I don't know how to fix that system. It seems, you know, at this mm-hmm. point, like there are ways to fix it, obviously. There are political ways to fix what is going on. Are the Democrats willing to do that? Time will tell. But we are now living in this system where the minority is winning elections, in quotes, not winning elections. They're losing elections, but still getting to be in power.
They've finagled ways to put justices in these positions. It's incredibly smart. But there are, you know, groups that are working outside of the systems to do this work now. There are groups on Reddit that are facilitating abortions through community-based aid. And so I thought, you know, to conclude this sad state of the world, we could discuss a few solutions. And some of these are joining and donating to groups that are already doing this work. There are many of them. You can donate to abortion funds. There is one where you can split your gift between 80 different abortion funds. That's secure.actblue.com/donate/fundabortionnow. secure.actblue.com/donate/fundabortionnow. And then I posted a link in my bio to, it's a separate document that has a state-by-state breakdown of abortion funds. And you can find that at bit.ly/abortionfundsTwitter, bit.ly/abortionfunds Twitter. And another idea that I saw that, you know, has a little similarity to our beloved game.
This is how you're going to relate all this back now? This is how we're going to come back to The Bachelor?
I have some connectors. Okay. I do have some connectors. So perhaps it is time for a huge unionization play.
Oh.
I saw some very convincing Twitter threads about doing a general strike. The whole country doing repeated unionization plays until we can get what the majority of the country actually wants to be our policies. And two ways that this connects to The Bachelor. Number one, in our, gosh, I guess Twibbon last week, we were just talking about Mike Johnson and Brian Abasolo on Talking It Out, mocking the very idea of taking a woman's name. I think that is kind of representative of a patriarchal view.
Absolutely.
That relates to this.
Yeah, it's all tied in. I mean, all the things that you were talking about too. It's like, yeah, this draft opinion came out, but it's not just about abortion. It's everything that you're talking about is tied into it. The threads of our society, mm-hmm. how it is founded on these ideas of like Mike Johnson and Brian Abasolo, not only saying they wouldn't take their wife's last name, but like joking about the very concept of it, how absurd that is.
Mm-hmm. Abortion access is connected to all these things. It is a racial justice issue. It is a healthcare issue. It is a housing issue. I mean, I just like generally wish that we were paying taxes not for police and for the military, but for education, for healthcare, for all of these things that are actual proven ways. Like that, you don't stop crime.
I agree.
With police. You stop crime by building up communities.
If I may, the IRS sends you a bill at the end of the year or whatever. You got to pay this much money or here's how much money you've paid out of your paychecks over the course of the year, whatever. They have that number. There's then a website that you get to go on, and it has a bunch of different places where you get to allocate the money that you've paid in taxes. That's how I think taxes should be paid. You can have the money. Just let me pick where it gets to go. That's all. Into whatever government programs exist. Never going to happen.
There was this tweet that by this doctor that went around and went viral. And I think for very good reason, because I think that it is a perfect tweet. Takara Mallard said, "Forced birth in a country with the highest maternal mortality rate, no paid maternity leave, no universal subsidized childcare, no continued birth parent care, and frequently inaccessible mental health care." It's hard to talk about, but I feel that I have to do everything in my power to work to not get Roe overturned.
Sure.
And I hope if people are on board with that idea that they are organizing within their own communities, within their own group chats, for instance. And, you know, I think that bodily autonomy is a human right, except, and here's going to be my other connection to Bachelor, I think you should only have to give up your human rights when you go on The Bachelor.
I don't even think then.
Taj can't pee, Taj can't poop.
Yeah. At least in that case, you're signing a contract like that you're supposedly reading. It's stated in the contract that you give up your civil rights. So at least you know going in, that's what it's going to be. The case is a little different here in the modern United States of America. But that is the state of the world. It's a bleak state at this moment, but we still have hope. We can still turn this around. So get out there, do what you can. Like Pace Case said, get in your group chats, hit up all these things. We're going to have links to this on our social media and all of that. And let's see if we can't make the world a better place.
And I would encourage, like, if you've never been to a political rally, like, or worked with a social justice group, just, you know, try it out. Just, you know, it's not as scary as it might seem to get involved in these things. You know, wear good shoes, wear sunscreen, make it a friend bonding thing. You're going to make some pretty signs together, or you're going to call your senators together over Spade and Sparrow's wine, perchance. You know, there are ways for this to be for social justice, because it is a marathon. It's not a sprint. So there are ways to incorporate it into your life in a way that is fun.
Speaking of things that are fun, now let's move on from this very serious topic into our next segment. This is one that we just premiered a few weeks ago, and Pace Case and I have enjoyed it.
It's already a hit.
Yeah, it's already a huge hit.
Huge hit.
This is
What Are You Watching?
What are you watching?
I watched about the first 25 minutes of a program on Netflix.com called The Bubble. This is Judd Apatow's most recent movie. Well, I'll just say that I was told that I should watch this movie because it was unwatchable. And indeed it is. It is one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life. I can't, but I'm like salivating to watch the rest of it. I really like watching like shitty movies. So the premise of this movie is, again, this is a Judd Apatow movie. This is somebody who, there's a certain kind of group of guys in movie comedy. To some degree, TV comedy, I would say as well. But it's Adam Sandler, it's Judd Apatow, and it's Kevin James. And in some cases, they work together with each other. But these are like, you know, these kind of like everyman type guys who in all their movies have what I have dubbed perfect life, which means like everything in the movie turns out in their favor to, in some cases, like insane degrees. Like in the movie Pixels, for example, is a good one. Kevin James and Adam Sandler are both in that one. In that one, Adam Sandler plays as a kid. He was like the greatest arcade game player of all time, but he got beat by Peter Dinklage in like this big tournament. Then in the movie, aliens invade planet Earth, and they invade in the style of old video game characters. So they have to get these people who were like great at these video games when they were kids to save the Earth from these aliens. And in it, in the very end, Adam Sandler, of course, saves the world. He gets, I forget who the woman is in that one, but it's some beautiful woman. All these movies have that. That's part of Perfect Life, that these guys who are like not supermodels wind up with supermodels, like in Grown Ups 2. Adam Sandler is married to Salma Hayek, and you're just like, what fucking world is this ever happening? At any rate, in that one, in Pixels, Peter Dinklage in the end comes out and says, hey, I know that I beat you in that video game when we were 10 years old, but I have to tell you the truth, I cheated. So even this thing, even this one past thing that wasn't perfect gets made perfect for him. At any rate, that's neither here nor there. I'm 25 minutes into this fucking movie. Judd Apatow is a similar kind of like...
What is the premise?
The premise is, it's taking place during COVID, and a big studio has to shoot the next movie in this franchise called Cliff Beasts, which is about these flying dinosaurs. And it's like the biggest franchise in the world. It is so lazy, the premise of Cliff Beasts. Like, it's supposed to be kind of a parody of a Fast and a Furious meets Jurassic Park or something. So lazy, not funny, not interesting.
I mean, the title Cliff Beasts is hard to say.
Correct. A terrible, just terrible from top to bottom. Then all these actors show up in England to quarantine in this hotel for 2 weeks. And it's like, oh my God. And Karen Gillian is, or Gillian, I don't know how you pronounce her last name, but she's kind of the main star of it. And so you get a whole montage of her in her room, like, oh my God, I'm eating pizza, I'm doing whatever. She's like having a hard time doing her 2 weeks in quarantine. They all come out of quarantine, they start to shoot, and then the person who gets their coffee has tested positive. So then they all have to go back into quarantine again. You get another montage of now all these characters doing the 2 weeks in quarantine. It's just, it is belligerently bad, and I'm loving it. And so I'm like trying to savor it a little bit because it's just so terrible. God. It's got all this shit about like swabbing their noses, and they're doing jokes with like putting the Q-tips in people's beards and shit. It's just, it's unbelievable that it's real, that this movie is real. It is, I just can't.
I've never heard of it.
It was a Netflix movie Didn't come out in the theaters or anything. Ooh. And again, it's about shooting a movie during COVID. The premise, so it's already busted. No one wants to watch that now. And there was no foresight to be like, well, we'll make this movie and then it'll come out a year later, which maybe people are going to not want to be looking at COVID shit.
Yeah, maybe give it some time.
Oh my God. It's just, I don't know. I recommend it if you like bad movies, if you're like a connoisseur of them. And for me at this point in movies, like after The Room, which came out in the early 2000s, that I think was the last important piece of film art. It's all that matters now. The deconstruction of storytelling through these like bad movies is kind of like where it's at. They're as entertaining to me as a good movie, even more so at this point, because good movies are like, there's a million good movies that have been made over the course of human history at this point. You can go watch any of them.
Yeah. You know what's really hard? You make a fucking the worst movie ever. That's hard.
That's The Room. And The Room is a massive success because of it.
I mean, I would argue that they're not shitty movies. I would argue that they're then great movies. That's how I feel about reality TV. I'm like, it's not trash TV. It's perfect TV.
But that's like a different genre. I mean, a movie is depending on what genre it is or whatever, it's trying to hit certain marks. You're trying to like be invested in the characters, care about the outcome, interested in the plot, whatever. Or the performances can sometimes do weird things to a movie. That's The Room, essentially, is like bad premise, bad plot, bad execution, bad acting, strange overuse of special effects for no reason, and a really
strange overuse. Do you see the beasts? The cliff beasts?
Oh yeah, you get full scenes from the movie they're making. So it will go from like behind the scenes shit of them doing the movie to just like a scene in the movie where you see the full special effects and shit. It's top to bottom just a fucking mess. And I can't wait to finish it. Anyway, what are you watching?
I remember that I watched when Adam Sandler was given that like carte blanche thing at Netflix to make any movie he wanted. I didn't watch The Cobbler, but I watched the other one where he and a woman end up like being involved in some sort of murder or something. It was so confusing. It was one of the most confusing movies I've ever seen.
Yeah, The Cobbler's an interesting one to bring up. That one, I've watched all of Sandler's canon. It's an interesting body of work, to say the least. I'm fascinated with it. But in The Cobbler, if you don't know, the premise of The Cobbler is he comes from a long line of cobblers. And in his cobbling studio, his cobbling machine breaks. And so he dusts off this old one that has been passed down through generations, and it's magic. And when you cobble shoes with this cobbling machine and then put them on, you assume the visual identity of the person whose shoes they are. And so in one scene in this movie, this like good looking guy comes in who's kind of an asshole to have his shoes cobbled, and Sandler cobbles them, and he has seen that this guy has like this super hot girlfriend. So he puts the guy's shoes on and he goes and he almost does a rape. He like is in the
like Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah. He's in the woman's house. He's about to get into the shower with her. And then he's like, I can't do this. And he walks away.
Oh my God.
That's right. And nothing happens to him.
I'm not going to be watching The Cobbler. What am I watching? I found out that Jake has never seen Happy Endings. Have you seen that show?
Yeah, I've seen probably 10 to 15 episodes.
I love that show. It's a half hour comedy about a friend group. I think it was made in like 2010-ish. So there's some stuff that is not going to hold up, but it is hilarious. It is so funny. It is extremely well written. The cast is incredible. There's a couple duds, I would say, but the rest of the cast are so funny. And it goes off Netflix at the end of May, I just realized. So if you're going to watch it, get in now. And I also started The Ultimatum, which is the Netflix trying to do Love is Blind next iteration. It's got Nick and Vanessa Lachey hosting again.
It's the same production company as Love is Blind.
Oh, that makes sense. I would say it is somewhat less thought out than Love is Blind. It is sort of a chaotic structure, and the premise blows up pretty early on in some ways. And all of the people that they got for this are like in their early 20s, which is like very bizarre that they are all issuing marriage ultimatums in their early 20s. And it just makes me think they want to be influencers. So I'm enjoying it for, you know, as I'm enjoying a lot of reality dating shows, it's like, it's enjoying the like journey of watching people who want to be influencers pretend to engage in these other things. And I'm only halfway through maybe. So I haven't really seen how it ultimately plays out, but I'm enjoying it. By the way, they do a lot of praising of the process, even though it's a season one show. So it doesn't make any sense to praise the process. They're like, but that's why we're here. You know, trust the process. I mean, this is going to be good for us. It's like, you don't know that.
Yeah, not
you
yet.
You don't know any of that.
Well, they do kind of know. It's like...
they will in season two.
Yeah, it could be good for us if we become influencers. But that's what we're watching right now. And let's now move on to the next segment of our show in which we discuss all those luscious tids.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Clues. A Mother's Day is coming up.
That's true.
You know, that's one of the most important holidays. We got to honor our mothers. They all went through a lot to get us here into this planet. And the gifts for Mother's Day, they can be a little predictable and boring. Sweaters, candles, the dreaded bathrobe. You only need one bathrobe, in my opinion. That's why Aura Frames is the perfect gift to mix things up this year. Named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter, Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
Aura Frames are Wi-Fi connected. They come with unlimited storage. You can share as many photos as you want from your phone to your mom's frame. Not only is she going to be grateful that it's not just another sweater for Mother's Day, she's also going to love that an Aura frame means she gets to see more of you. Or in my case, she gets to see more of my cat, Skaboolian. My mom loves seeing him rolling around, playing with his toys, doing whatever, and I can upload as many images of him as I want every day, and my mom gets to see them in her Aura frame and then text me about it for all the rest of the day. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Everybody listening to Game of Roses can save on that perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code ROSES at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
Clues, have you ever experienced a dry, itchy scalp or ever wondered
Hell yes.
why your color isn't lasting as long as your hairdresser promised?
Hell yes. Well, unfiltered mineral water could be the reason why. Did you know hard water is a leading cause of damaged hair and dry, irritated skin? And about 75% of the United States uses hard water filled with dissolved minerals and added chlorine.
I thought it was 85%. And that's where Canopy's new filtered showerhead comes in. Canopy, known for their beauty hacks and reimagined humidifier, has revolutionized the filtered showerhead. Dermatologists recommended unique three-stage filtration system greatly reduces contaminants and odors in your shower water, leaving you with healthy hair and glowing skin.
Best of all, the Canopy filtered showerhead is hassle-free. Installation's a breeze, and it's unique. Quick-release filter replacement feature allows for seamless filter replacement unlike any others on the market.
Go to getcanopy.co to save $25 on your Canopy filtered showerhead purchase today with Canopy's hassle-free filter subscription.
Even better, anybody listening to Gore right now can use code ROSES at checkout to save an additional 10% off your Canopy purchase. Hurry, your hair and skin will thank you.
This is Bachelor Nation News.
To open Bachelor Nation News, we have a Bachelor Live on Stage update. As you know, last week, the Dark Seeker and myself attended Bachelor Live on Stage here in Los Angeles, and we delivered an in-depth account of our experience earlier this week. Since that episode's release, I've been flooded with DMs from people who attended the event in their own cities. These DMs essentially serve as notes that we are now comparing to get a better idea about the differences that are at each of these various showings.
In-depth reporting.
It truly is. And what I'm learning from these notes is that there are no differences between the shows in the different cities whatsoever. Even down to what I mistakenly thought was a candid moment on stage between the Big Body Trash Can and his Tropical Royale significant other, Becca Kufrin. I reported that at one point during the show that me and Dark Seeker went to, the Big Body Trash Can emerged from off stage with the couple's dogs. He then took center stage with Kufrin, where he blurted out that they were trying to have kids, and then Kufrin seemed to get angry and tell him to, in quotes, shut the fuck up. Again, I thought this was a real moment. I thought that this was something off script that she was getting pissed at.
Pulling a Pace case. Gullible town.
But now, after receiving countless DMs from people explaining that they saw the exact same exchange between Big Body Trash Can and Kufrin in different cities, it's clear that this is actually written into the show for some reason. And Bachelor Live on Stage offers nothing genuine at all. I even got a DM that Garrett Yegarian delivered an almost identical line way back in the pre-pandemic Bachelor Live on Stage. So the idea to lie to the audience about attempting to have kids has been baked into Bachelor Live on Stage since the beginning. Thank you to everybody who DM'd me to help me get to the bottom of this. I don't really understand why they would do this, but that's where we are with it.
I don't understand either. I guess it's to try to get like an Us Weekly article.
But if they're doing it at every, there were like 40 of these shows. Right. There's no... It's just a strange thing, I think, to like titillate the audience or something. I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah, get them sure. A tizzy. They want to see that Tropical Royale baby.
But the key takeaway for me for all of this is that it's all 100% scripted. The Bachelor Live on Stage experience is about as real as any of the Bachelor podcasts, the official ones. Straight lies. Straight lies.
Yeah, the part that they don't tailor the show at all to the specific man and just insert his name with tape is, what are we doing here?
It's literally a piece of construction paper on the cue cards that is a different color than the cue card itself. So if you're sitting close enough in the audience, it's extremely apparent. You're like, they just fucking taped his name on. They can't even write one new cue card. This is insane.
I mean, I think it probably still has some of the intended purpose. Those guys probably got laid a lot.
Who?
All the Bachelor Live, Bachelors of the Live on Stage.
Oh, you think that's what happens after the Bachelor Live on Stage ends? They just fucking go out to the bar and like, whoever's around. No way. Go on.
Not whoever's around, but they got their riot dates lined up in the audience.
Oh, okay. I'm believing this now.
Who knows? It gives them a certain cachet. It's like a minor league baseball or whatever. Speaking of... things that turn out to be different than we originally thought. Next up in Bachelor Nation news, Bachelor Season 25 lead Matt James has a new book out. First Impressions, Off-Screen Conversations with a Bachelor on Race, Family, and Forgiveness was released this Tuesday, and the revelations contained within its pages are taking the nation by storm, including the fact that James didn't know he was the first Black Bachelor in the show's 20-year history until shortly before shooting his season. James told Us Weekly, "I wasn't really asking the right questions, or I guess I didn't think that was something that hadn't been done. It's 2022. I didn't think that that was something that we hadn't crossed yet. I've seen a bunch of Black people come through the franchise that I guess I assumed there had been a Black Bachelor."
James does cover some of his experience surrounding the Rachel Kirkconnell controversy during his season, but purposely omitted any discussion of the Dark Lord's dismissal from the franchise, citing, "We spent enough time talking about that stuff. I hate beating a dead horse, and everything's played out how it's played out. And there's no need to go back to something that we've talked about so much. Because, unfortunately, those type of conversations overshadowed context that I would have liked to have been applied to the season that would have answered a bunch of questions. They had things that I talked about and discussed and went into depth in my dates and on group dates and on one-on-ones that never aired. So I didn't want to take any more time to talk about that stuff. I wanted to focus on themes that I felt could really help people, and I don't think that going back on that would be any help to anybody."
In his book, James explains that he barely recognized himself as he watched the premiere. "This had been billed as my season," he writes, "but it wasn't. Not really, at least. I thought I was in the driver's seat. I didn't remember handing over ownership of my story, but watching the premiere, it was clear that I had. The producers would craft my story now.
James describes his season as being dominated by, in quotes, blatantly inauthentic dramatic twists that waited around every corner. Stay tuned for moments, drama for drama's sake. I didn't appreciate just how mean-spirited people could get with one another. The calculated conflicts wore on me.
James also goes into detail about his relationship with Kirkconnell, how he handled the photos of her attending an antebellum ball, his relationship with his family, and much more about his experience being the first Black Bachelor. Congrats to Matt James for penning this incredible addition to the canon of former leads that has become so instrumental in bettering our understanding of our beloved game.
Next up in Bachelor Nation News, it's festival season in the nation. And after an incredible player turnout at Coachella last week, several top players and Paradise hopefuls alike turned out for the festival that has become synonymous with our beloved game. Stagecoach.
The king of Stagecoach himself, Baylock Eye, aka Blake Hortzman, was not only in attendance this year, but he elevated his status from attendee to performer by DJing on stage. Hortzman was instrumental in weaving Stagecoach into our beloved game on BIP Season 6, after producers used knowledge about his romantic endeavors at Stagecoach 2019 to build a villain narrative for him.
Along with Hortzman, the all-time Instagram leader, Hannah Brown was in attendance. Pizza mom Amanda Stanton showed up with her 10-year-old daughter, Kinsey, and her fiancé, Michael Fogel. Victims of a forced producer breakup on last season of BIP, FinPro's recipient Abigail Herringer and young Noah Erb made the trek to Indio, California as well. Bachelorette season 17 lead Katie Thurston donned a cowboy hat for the event. And the big body trash can himself, Thomas Jacobs, also turned out for some steel guitar.
Along with these heavy hitters, some rookies showed the nation that they understand the importance of the festival circuit during the offseason. Cassidy Timbrooks, Haley Malls, Kira Mengistu, Hunter Hogg, and Kate Gallivan all posseed up for some fantastic parasocial play in cowboy boots and hats. We'll know very soon if they were able to generate any off-season romances that might lead to narratives on the upcoming season 8 of Bachelor in Paradise that is scheduled to go into production in the beginning of June.
Congrats to everyone for surviving Stagecoach and doing all their good work.
Our next challenge.
That's right.
Stagecoach 2023, clues and pace case.
I mean, I'm down. I'm down to do it if you are. I don't know how I will survive that. I'm going to have to get in a hotel, but I'm definitely not going to be doing the camping.
I'm not camping again. But what you have to do, I think, is get somewhere you can bicycle to, and I'll bring my bike.
I ain't riding a bike.
I guess you probably don't want a bicycle.
Nah, I ain't riding a fucking bike.
We'll figure something out for you.
Yeah, some kind of portable bubble that I can just sit in. Next up in Bachelor Nation News, it's the Senior Bachelor. We all remember hearing about the possibility of a Bachelor-style show that would feature players outside the normal age range of our beloved game. That was back in 2020. Since then, we haven't heard any new information about it. But this week, the head of ABC Alternative Programming, Rob Mills, said, in quotes, "We absolutely want to get it done, but we want to do it right, do it safely, and not at the expense of the other Bachelor cycles, so it's on hold. But I have to say, we had never seen a response like we've seen here. I think it's definitely coming sooner rather than later."
Mills teased that Gabby Windy's grandfather, John, might be in contention for the show, saying, "I would be crazy to say that we didn't notice all the affection and interest in Gabby's grandfather, so you never know. Everyone wants to see him find love. Gabby's grandfather really gave the thesis of what the show should be, which is that he found that great love. We saw that he still wears the ring. So by the way, he might not be ready for something like this. And then there's the question of having one great love in your lifetime. But can you have another?"
Time will tell, I suppose. This is very interesting, though. The most interesting thing that came out of this was Mills saying he didn't want to make the show at the expense of the other Bachelor cycles. So that means it would be airing in the off season if they're going to do it. And finally, in Bachelor Nation news, a big happy birthday goes out to the Ultimate Viking himself, who began his 29th trip around our dying sun on April 29th. Happy birthday, Clayton.
Happy birthday, Clayton. Let's go.
And now it's time for us to delve into all those plays that our players are making off the field on their telephones. This is
The parasocial play of the week.
The magnificent and ultimate goat, Caitlin Bristow, and her paramour, Jason Tardik, danced to the popular TikTok sound, money jiggle jiggle, want to see wiggle wiggle sound, with Ramen and Pino in the background. The caption reads, we had two date night options. One, a nice sushi dinner, or two, learn a vibey dance. Which would you do? Duh. And it is vibey. The post has close to 800,000 views.
Cassidy Timbrooks, champion of Friends with Benefits on the Ultimate Vikings season, posted a Twitter thread in quotes, you know what else we should address? Domestic murder rates being certain to rise when men, especially in low-income communities, would rather kill their partner than get stuck with 18 years of child support. Women will die. It goes without saying that if there are more unplanned / unwanted pregnancies and voluntary abortion is not available, this will certainly be a death sentence for many women in abusive relationships. Pregnant women are 16% more at risk of being killed than non-pregnant women. You're not going to like this stat either. This risk is tripled for Black women who are already statistically significantly more likely to be the victims of domestic homicide than white women. I did not know these statistics, and I've been impressed with Tim Brooks's parasocial play.
She did several posts that were at the top of the forums this week about access to abortion this week, and I checked these stats. There's a study published in Obstetrics and Gynecology where they compared homicide and pregnancy-related deaths, and they found that U.S. women who are pregnant or were pregnant in the past 42 days die by homicide at more than twice the rate that they die of bleeding or placental disorders, the leading causes of what are usually classified as pregnancy-related deaths. And becoming pregnant increases the risk of death by homicide between the ages of 10 and 44 years. Women who are pregnant or had their pregnancy end in the past year are killed at a rate of 16% higher than women who are not pregnant. Disturbing.
Yeah,
absolutely,
that is
disturbing.
Well, thanks go out to Cassidy Timbrooks for illuminating us with this information and this astounding parasocial play.
The iconic dynamic duo that is former Crown JoJo Fletcher and Becca Tilly attended Stagecoach together last week and made a TikTok where they go from casual to country. The caption reads, did we have to spray menthol pain reliever on our feet to make it through? Sure. Did we have a blast scooting around in our boots? Absolutely. Cowboy hat emoji, palm tree emoji, two dancing girl emojis. The post has 45.3K likes on Tilly's Instagram and 188.6K views on her TikTok.
The tear god. Ashley Iaconetti shared a reel of her and Jared Iaconetti's love story. The caption reads, a not-so-classic story of boy meets girl. The video highlights male goat and infamous dating advice giver Nick Vial saying, in quotes, you're not going to be with him. I'm sorry. You will never be with Jared. Then Iaconetti shows
never
her
be
and Jared.
With Jared.
Then Iaconetti shows herself and Jared getting married and then having a baby. The video has 540,000 views and 38,000 likes. They also put out a very interesting Instagram story this week of them performing karaoke at their cafe in New Jersey. Loved seeing it.
What'd they sing? Disney?
Yeah. I believe it was the Aladdin song. Was it? I don't fucking remember what it was. All that was going through my mind when I saw it was like, I have to get to that cafe to sing a Creed song or something.
I have to get to that cafe. Nate Olukoya posted a TikTok this week about his time in the fantasy suite with Michelle Young to a song that starts with the lyrics, boy, I've got options. Over the song, Olukoya mouths shirtless in bed like he's having a discussion during this crucial round of playoffs. The TikTok has 10.4K likes and 257K views.
These parasocial plays were all top-notch, but there can be only one winner, and that award goes to the horse, Balakai himself. Blake Horstman celebrated his full circle moment by posting pictures and videos of his headline set at Stagecoach. The post included a caption that taunted the same producers who tried to use the Stagecoach story to destroy him in Paradise. In quotes, full circle, winking kissy face. I can't express the love I feel for the thousands that came out last night. Heart emoji. I have never felt energy like that. At Stagecoach is something special. And that honky-tonk tent was like nothing I have seen. Those of you that came out, we are family, baby. smiling face with a cowboy hat emoji. See you next year. Hashtag hi producers. Hashtag we met at Stagecoach. Hashtag nice try.
Nice
Loved
try.
Seeing that shit. Loved seeing that shit. I love when former star players remind the producers they're the celebrities. They're the ones in control of their own narrative now, and they can do whatever the fuck they want. Love it. Fantastic.
You know, I wasn't at Stagecoach. I had COVID, and I had not the energy to do that after Coachella, but the videos of this performance in the honky-tonk tent, I don't know how videos could be electric, but they were, and I loved them, and I was so proud of Bela Kai for reclaiming that narrative, and, you know, he's living his dream. It's wonderful to see.
Here's my problem with Stagecoach and why I think it would be the hardest thing for me about it if I were to go there is I hate country music.
Mm.
It's one of the only that kinds of music problem. That I cannot stand. It is like, it's painful to me to hear it.
All of it?
With some very rare exceptions.
What about like Shania Twain?
No. I don't like it.
Taylor Swift. No, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it.
I'm not a big Taylor Swift fan. I'm sorry.
Oh my God. Oh my
I know.
God. This is the worst week ever.
I like EDM and I like 90s grunge, and that's about it. That's not true. I like pretty much all music that is not country.
Well, you're doing it for journalism. You're not doing it for musical passion.
No, I know, but country music, it affects me very negatively. Like, I won't be able to concentrate and shit.
Put earplugs.
That's in. What I'm saying. I might have to be wearing headphones. It's playing other music or something. We'll see. Anyways, now let's move on to the parasocial plays of some non-human members of our nation. We're talking about the parasocial creature of the week. And this week, there were some contenders. The ultimate Viking got to hang out with a sloth for his 29th birthday. Nate Olakoya and Percy did some carpool karaoke. John Hersey and his pup Dexter did a little sunbathing. These were all great. But there can only be one winner. And this week, the Parasocial Creature of the Week award goes to a goat who was strutting his stuff all over the Indio Desert in celebration of Stagecoach. And this goat had enough game sense to strut that stuff right up to Katie Thurston's window so she could get an Instagram reel of him. Now, this game sense is incredible all by itself, but it doesn't stop here. As soon as Thurston turns the camera on this magnificent creature, he proceeds to take a shit, giving us nostalgic vibes reminiscent of the shitting donkey from Matt James season 25 of The Bachelor. Congrats to this goat for this incredible Stagecoach shit play, and congrats to Katie Thurston for recording it all and posting it for us to see.
I love when creatures have game sense.
We very rarely see shit play in our beloved game
and engage in scat play.
It's super rare, but when
shit
we see
play
it
is rare.
I'm always appreciative.
We had Chad Johnson and this goat and the donkey,
and I would even say Taj qualifies as scat play by saying that she couldn't poop.
You're right.
That rounds out all the parasocial plays from humans and non-humans alike, all the scat play, all the non-scat play. Now it is time for Pace Case and I to descend deep into the pit to issue forth our screams about how our fandom of our beloved game has overtaken our lives. This is
Screams from the pit.
My scream this week is that immediately after learning about the Supreme Court decision, I felt like my social media was pretty quiet, you know, crickets in the feeds, etc. And I realized that this is because my feed is only giving me Bachelor people at this point. And that actually a lot of people are up in arms about this. And some Bachelor people, you know, you got Cassie Timbrooks out there. You got Rachel Kirkconnell posting a very eloquent Instagram story about this. Elizabeth Corrigan out there. Some people. But
we're almost through the second month of this year, but that doesn't mean that you should forget about those New Year's resolutions, your new goals, especially your skincare goals. Small, easy changes in your routine can have amazing results. And your secret weapon should be Dime Beauty. I've been using this stuff. Look at me. Look at my face, Pace Case.
You're glowing.
How young do I look? Tell me. Tell me the number.
That's a Pace Case glow. You look like a little baby.
Thank you. That's the look I'm going for. And I put the stuff on at night, Dime's eye cream. And then they have a dewy day cream that I also use. And this is the result.
I've literally never used a moisturizer before. Mm-hmm. I've always had oily skin, but now it's getting to that time. And I made one of my New Year's resolutions to be to do my skincare routine. And I'm using the dewy day cream in the morning. I keep it on the left. Using the restorative night cream, I keep it on the right. It's bim, bam, boom. I know which one to use. And now my face is moisturized all the time. And it's so nice.
You look like a baby as well.
Thank you. I was waiting for it. A little slow. But this takes the guesswork out of the routine. So this is part of the work system, the two moisturizers. There's also a sold out retinol alternative, the TBT cream. I can't wait to try that one as well. Dime has over 2 million happy customers and their product reviews are literally all 5 stars.
This year, love your skin again. Go to dimebeautyco.com now and unlock your discount. That's dimebeautyco.com. Creams and serums are made of 70% water, 15% preservatives and emulsifiers, leaving only around 15% for the active ingredients that your skin needs. But luckily now, there's Fiber Skincare.
15 years ago, the scientists behind Fiber Skincare started working on nanofibers, which are 500 times smaller than human hair. You know, I saw that in 3 Body Problem. Mm. 1 year ago, they patented a way of wrapping the nanofiber around oil or liquid-based ingredients. This means they can deliver 5 times the active ingredients compared to creams or serums, as there is no need for water, preservatives, or emulsifiers.
The first formulation made with this technology is plant-based, anti-wrinkle. It's a set of patches that you use over a series of 7 days. You just put these on whenever you would apply your serums, and your skin is going to feel tighter in 10 seconds. And over the 7-day program, it has been clinically proven to reduce wrinkles by, get this, 19.4%, a very precise percentage. In fact, they have a tighter skin guarantee. If your skin isn't tighter in 7 days, they're going to give you your money back, no questions asked.
You get the tighter skin guarantee with this 7-day routine. Tighter skin or your money back. Get a 15% discount code by using the discount code GAME. That's Fiber Skincare.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com. Yeah, the fact that everything is filtered through Bachelor so that it's now changing my like perception of reality is it's something.
Yeah, I know exactly this feeling. I don't remember when it happened for me. It was probably sometime actually around Bachelor season 21. It was Vial season 2016, where I was doing a lot of Bachelor memes.
Something about that season really got to you, huh?
Well, it was when I started kicking meme production to high gear. And as a result, I was following exclusively Bachelor people on my Bachelor Clues account. And that was obviously during the 2016 election. And like, I didn't see a lot of news about that in that feed. And I was just like, this is weird. Yeah. And I'm like, oh no, it's because it's all Bachelor shit. I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily. Get your news on Twitter.
Look, I was on Twitter also. And I mean, that's part of why I haven't slept this week. It's just doom scrolling.
Yep. The doom scroll will get you.
Yeah. What is your scream?
My scream this week is about not a doom scroll, but a Zoom meeting. I couldn't rhyme it with scroll, sorry.
A poet for our age.
Yeah. I got an email from a friend of mine that I've known since college. We haven't talked in a minute, but he is producing a TV show currently that is kind of like a docu show. And he hit me up and he was like, hey, you know, what's up? Would you be down with doing a Zoom with me and the host of this show about cryonics? Because you're the only person I know who's going to get frozen when you die. And I'm like, yeah, sure. And they're thinking about doing some segment about it or whatever, right?
Uh-huh.
And so I'm like, okay, yeah. There was nothing mentioned in this email about The Bachelor or any of that. I click into the Zoom. We start talking about cryonics. I'm telling everybody in this Zoom call everything that I know about how much I pay for the thing and the life insurance and where the facility is located.
And the Cryo Feast and the Cryo Magazine.
I talked about Cryonics Magazine and the Cryo Feasts. And I talked about how it's the 50th anniversary of this company, Alcor, is happening now. And they're having a big event in Scottsdale, I think, for the 50th anniversary coming up in June.
Wyandotte territory.
Exactly. And so I was like, oh, you guys should go out there. You know, I'm sure you'd have a weird time talking to all these people. Because some people who are into it are like lifestyle enthusiasts of cryonics.
I would say if you are signed up to have your body frozen, I think you're inherently a lifestyle cryo person.
No. You're not. I'm never trying to convince people to fucking freeze their body. I don't talk about this shit unless somebody asks me. You know what I mean? There are other people in this community that are like, the way we are about the Bachelor.
Recruiting.
Yeah.
Wake up in the future with me.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think it's going to work. I actually think it's a bad idea. I think there's like a 0.01% chance that I will be unthawed. But for me, that's like, it's worth a dice roll, I guess. There are other people who are like, no, this is going to work. This is how we beat death, et cetera, et cetera. So we're talking about the cryonics. Then somehow, I can't even really recall how it happened. The entire Zoom call just moves into talking about The Bachelor. And I'm starting to go through very detailed descriptions of what the game is like, how it's a mirror for our society, how, you know, Bachelor Live on Stage was, how there's these podcasts that uphold the lie.
Live on Stage.
I just go into all of it. And it's like, usually when I do this, I could see people's eyes kind of glaze over. That wasn't the case here. They were fascinated by this shit. And that just fueled it even more. And I kept fucking going.
And you're like, and they have a new docuseries.
Yeah, basically. I don't know what they'll do with it. Probably nothing. But I just was astounded that it went from cryogenic freezing to, and again, I don't remember what the transition was or how I even did this, but I did it and it worked. I just went into a straight fucking like, here's a thesis on The Bachelor. And I haven't done that in a minute. I certainly haven't done it in a situation like this. Not that this was like necessarily a professional situation. I'm not working on the show. They were just kind of like doing fact finding. And I was like happy to help out my buddy. But it was nonetheless a semi-professional
kind of a professional situation.
Maybe a little bit.
Pre-consulting.
Yeah. I mean, informally, not any kind of contract being signed or anything. But I found it pretty funny. And I hope they enjoyed the dissertation that I gave them on The Bachelor. But now it has come that time for us to delve deep into the pit and scrape up a scream as it's bouncing off the walls, echoing down around here with us. This one comes to us from ACB10D. That is the username. And if you want to submit your screams to us so that we might play them just like the one we're about to play, you just go to patreon.com/gameofroses. You join our Discord. And then in our Discord, there's a channel where you can submit a 1 minute or shorter audio clip. And we play some of our favorites here and then talk about them. Are you ready, Pace Case, to hear this scream from user ACB10D?
Let's go.
Hi, Pitt. As the end of Ultimate Viking season drew near, so did the due date of my first spawn. When I was 9 months pregnant, I looked at the release schedule and was relieved to see that the finale would air a full 2 weeks before my due date. On the Thursday before finale week, I was texting my friend Lean, who dragged me into the pit back in 2020, about the imminent dramatic finale. I messaged her that the baby needed to stay put until at least Wednesday so I could watch the finale comfortably at home. I also thought it would be perfect because then I could catch up on recap episodes while in labor. But the next day, Friday before the finale, my doctor advised I be checked into the hospital and induced. I can't lie that every day in the hospital that passed with no sign of baby left me less hopeful of being home to watch the finale. Ironically, my daughter was born at 7:30 a.m. on March 14th, the day of Clayton's finale. A mere 12 hours later, I sat in my hospital room watching the show live on my small in-room hospital TV, annoyed with every nurse and doctor who interrupted the document to check on me and my newborn baby. Since being home, baby has slept through several gore episodes, making her the youngest member of the pit.
Wowie. I'm glad you got to see the finale live as it aired. First of all, ACB10D, and thank you for submitting this scream. Is your child the youngest member of the pit? I'm not sure. Have there been other babies born into the pit? I don't know. It's possible. But I believe this is the first confirmation we have of it via scream.
We need to start playing the podcast for pre-babies in the womb. You put the phone on your tummy.
Right.
Let it listen. Please rate this podcast. It comes out. That's its first words.
Oh my God. Please never let that happen. I'm sorry if that ever happens to anyone. But I thought this was a fantastic scream. It perfectly illustrates how fandom of our beloved game can seep into every corner of your life, even something this important. Having a kid is potentially one of the most important moments of your life, one of the ones that will impact it for the rest of your life. And somehow still the concern of, I need to be home to watch this finale of the Ultimate Viking season, one of the worst rated seasons in the history of the fucking show that no one was watching. Nonetheless, ACB10D had to be home for it and wasn't. You know, and I can understand how you'd be super annoyed at those doctors and nurses coming in to fucking interrupt you.
Oh my God. Healthcare in this country. Interrupting the document. Well, first of all, congratulations on your first spawn. Very exciting. I loved the scream. I thought it was beautiful storytelling, AC. And I feel like I can relate to it, and I'll probably be watching some sort of reality TV when I have spawn, hopefully. My partner is playing a game called Elden Ring. Have you seen that?
Yes, I have seen it. I have played it.
You've played it.
Oh. I've put many hours into it, as have many people.
Yeah, he's very into it. And our friend sent me this DM of someone who was giving birth, and the partner was playing Elden Ring in the hospital. And this made me think of it. I was like, I think that's great, you know? Just like the Iaconetti's and Tom Brady jerseys and stuff. You know, bring your stuff in. Or your crystal, you bring in your ring light. Bring whatever makes you you. Makes you feel most at home.
Right. And in this case, it is The Bachelor, the most dystopian piece of media currently made in America.
Whatever document you want.
But thank you once again to ACB10D for that beautiful scream. And thank you to everybody for joining us today for This Week in Bachelor Nation. We hope you have enjoyed it, or at least been informed by some of it, even the darker stuff that we had to discuss what's going on in our country at the top of this episode. But we will be back next week with the continuation of Gore Girl Summer. You're not going to want to miss who we got coming up on Tuesday. I think you will be very excited to hear this. And before we go, as always, what is that dwab at?
It has been 7,347 days without an Asian bachelor. Praise be Roe v. Wade.
Please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us. And then please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us. And then please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us, and then